So take a moment and really get here. Close your eyes and just really feel your feet on the floor. Feel yourself sitting in the pew or on the chair. Maybe move around a little bit and really feel yourself present in your body. And whatever concerns you may have right now, just let them float up and out of your body, out into the universe. You can see them rising like bubbles of light, rising up and out. And see the angels and archangels and masters. They're receiving your troubles, your worries, your concerns, your joys, your accomplishments. And they'll hold on to all of those for you during the next little time while we meditate. So feel your body relax. Just feel the relaxation start at the top of your head. And go all the way through your body, through your face, your neck and your shoulders. Feel your shoulders drop. And feel it go through your arms and your hands, through your torso, and down through your thighs, your calves, your ankles, and your feet. And just relax. We're going to be visited by some colors. And the colors are going to speak to you. Each one has a message just for you. So imagine yourself in a beautiful ball of white light. And it's your safe space. Everything else, as in the outer world, can be there, but you are in your bubble of white light and you're safe. And now experience that light turning to a brilliant, vibrant, gorgeous red color. And it swirls all around your bubble of light. So you have this gorgeous red. It's the red of well-beingness, the red of stability. And it has a message for you. So listen for a moment. What does red want to say to you? Thank red as it turns into orange. Gorgeous orange, brilliant, bright, beautiful orange. So you're totally immersed in orange, running throughout your body, the orange of creativity. And ask Orange, what message do you have for me? And listen. Thank the orange as it slowly turns to a beautiful yellow, sunshine yellow. It sparkles and dances all around your circle. Gorgeous yellow, the yellow of power, the yellow of will. And ask yellow, what do you want to say to me, yellow? and listen. Yellow, as it slowly changes into a beautiful emerald green, the green of growth, green of spring, and the green of love. And feel yourself immersed in that green light throughout your body, throughout your mind, throughout your spirit, and ask green, "Green, what message do you have for me? I will listen." Thank the green and watch as it turns into a gorgeous blue. A beautiful blue of communication. And it sparkles and it shines and it swirls all around your circle and throughout your body. So you're totally immersed in blue. And as before, ask blue. "Blue, what do you want to say to me? What message do you have? I will listen." As the blue slowly leaves, you see it replaced by violet, gorgeous, deep violet color, and you welcome violet, the violet of intuition, the violet of seeing clearly. Ask violet, what does it have to say to you? What is your message? Thank violet as now it leaves. And your circle again becomes that beautiful white light that totally circles you. But throughout that white light now, as it encircles you, you see floating and merging beautiful rainbow colors. All the colors that just visited you, they're all there at one time, and they're swirling and moving and running throughout your body and your brain and your emotions, uplifting you, cleansing, bringing messages of joy and happiness and inspiration. and sit for just a moment with all of the colors moving through the white light in your circle. Thank all of the colors for having visited you. Thank each of them for the message that they gave you. And ask that you remember the message. And if it was a call to action of some kind, remember to take the action. If it was a thought or a feeling or an inspiration, take that with you. And remember that that circle of light is always there. The colors are always there. You just need to remember and call on them. They are there to help and to assist and support. And now come back to the room. Be aware of yourself again where you're seated. Your feet on the floor, ground yourself. Feel your energy reaching all the way down deep to the center of the earth so you're firmly grounded. And feel your energy reaching up through the sky as far into the universe so that you're constantly inspired. Good morning. So it's wonderful to be back here, to see all your smiling faces. I really want to tell you about the last week, so let me kind of tell you about it. I know that all of us experienced the snow, and I live in the foothills of the Cascade out in a little town, and so we got lots of snow, and so much so that we were snowed in and couldn't get out of the driveway, and it was a whole week before we were able to get somebody to come. I'm not very good at shoveling snow anymore. And so we finally got out, and that was all well and good. And so then starting late last week, I was by myself. My partner had gone off on a business trip, and so I was by myself. And it was Saturday night, and I'd had a great day, and everything was great. And it was 10 o'clock at night, and I was getting ready to go to bed. And the corgis had been fed and their needs met and so on, and the house was really quiet. And I was just getting ready to get into bed when from the kitchen I heard grun, clackety, clackety, grun, clackety, clackety. And I'm like, what? There's nobody else here. What on earth is that? So I go out to the kitchen and grun, clackety, clackety, grun, and I listen. It's the refrigerator. So I'm like, what is this? You know, here it is, 10 o'clock at night. Who are you going to call, right? Ghostbusters can't help. So I stand there, and I thought, okay, I'm a Reiki master. I'm going to give it Reiki. I'm going to do visualization. I'm going to ground it. So I went over, and I held the fridge, and I, come on, you know, it's too late at night. I can't do anything about it. And so I did all my woo-woo stuff, and it got quiet. Hey, you know, this stuff really works, and you can heal a refrigerator. That's pretty cool. So I took my hands off, grun, clackety, clack, grun, clack. Oh, great, thanks a lot. So I thought, you know what, there's no way I'm sleeping as long as that thing's plugged in, because how do I know it's not going to start a fire or blow up or whatever? So I had to pull it out, which, of course, you know, took me a while because I was by myself, and I don't know if you've ever tried to pull a refrigerator, but anyway, I got it out, and it was making its noises. So I said, okay, I'm unplugging you. You're going to spend the night without any electricity, so think about your sins. And I'm going to sleep. So I unplug the fridge and leave the refrigerator out. In the morning I get up and I think, okay, do I plug it in? Do I not plug it in? You know, there's food in there, you know, and I'm not going anywhere. And I have a small freezer. But anyway, so I thought, well, I'll plug it back in. I plugged it back in and it was fine. I thought, damn, I'm a healer. I'm good. So the day wore on. And, of course, I left it pulled out. And I thought, well, maybe it just needed more air or something like that. Well, I walked by one time and felt the side, and it was so hot that I almost couldn't hold my hand there. So I thought, okay. So I did a little more stuff, pulled as much out of the freezer as I could, tried to free up. Of course, I went to YouTube, right? What do you do when your fridge goes clackety-clack, right? And I read, more than likely it's the compressor, but it's this and that. And so I cleared it out, and I thought, went over, and it was cool. And I thought, damn, I'm good. A little while later, I walk by, I think I better just check and feel. It's hot as can be. So this went on the whole day. Well, by Monday, of course, it wasn't getting any better. And the refrigerator was 24 years old. I mean, you know, we're not talking about a spring chicken here. Where it had given many years. In fact, I said if it was a child, it would be up on its own by now, probably have its own family, be here helping me shovel snow if it hadn't moved away. You know, but no, it was a refrigerator. Well, the refrigerator finally died, and it died with a lot of food in it, so had to get rid of a lot of food, because I could have put it out in the snow, right, because it was so cold, but then who's going to come along, the raccoons and the rats and whoever was out there hungry? So I didn't want to do that. So that was those few days, living with, well, what's going to happen and the clackety-clacking. So then go buy a new fridge. Well, that's fine. So that in itself, of course, when you don't buy appliances a lot, that's intimidating because they're going to try to sell you more than what you need. So bought a new refrigerator. Then the following day had meetings. Then on Thursday, the new refrigerator was to be delivered. Well, that entailed getting some ice and snow out of the way because the delivery guys couldn't get their little cart through. So did that. They delivered the fridge, plugged it in. It's great. And I thought, you know, this period of time is calm and everything's going to be really good now. So come Friday, that's great, everything's fine. 7:15 at night, my phone rings. It's my sister, my 86-year-old sister, and she's out of breath. They tell me I have congestive heart failure, I'm going to the hospital. You don't have to do anything. I just wanted you to know. Click. Okay. So I called the friend that I thought was going to take her. She said, yeah, she called me too. I'm going to take her. I said, let me know what happens, because by the time I'd get there, it'd all be over anyway. So didn't get a call back that night. So this is Friday night. So then Saturday, finally, I get a call. She's doing better, but I need to go see her. And not only that, but you know what else? She had left her car, obviously parked, at the walk-in clinic that she had driven herself to when she was out of breath. So went, had to go all the way to the ends of Marysville to get her car, take it back to her house, and finally went to the hospital and visited her, and she's doing better. And here I am today, and that was my last week. So I'm really happy to be here. So when Kevin and Cindy asked me to talk today, Kevin said, well, what do you want to talk about? No, I said to you, what do you want me to talk about? I get mixed up there. And he said, why don't you talk about Christ consciousness? And I said, well, that's interesting, because I've never talked about that. And okay, we'll say I'll talk about Christ consciousness. So of course, I immediately started thinking, well, what is Christ consciousness? Part of the issue with that word Christ is for most of us who have been raised in traditional religions and maybe weren't quite as nourished as we would have liked to have been, the word Christ can not always have really good connotations. And then, of course, there's the thing that it's Jesus Christ, so that's Jesus' last name. So it must have been Mary Christ, Joseph Christ, and Jesus Christ. And their little mailbox outside their little home said the Christ family. But then we learn that's not what it means, and it's talking about Jesus, the Christ, and there's Christ consciousness. And so, well, what is that? Does that mean I'm like a goody two-shoes, or what does it mean? And to me, what Christ consciousness is all about, and this next sentence is going to be, my whole talk is going to be around this next sentence, is we are miracle makers, and we are here to make miracles. We are miracle makers, and we are here to make miracles. Christ consciousness is miracle consciousness. So that's my talk. Anybody who wants to go ahead and surf the net and check your Instagram or whatever, go ahead. You're free to do that. However, I'm going to give a little insight into how we can become more miracle-minded or more magical-minded or more Christ-minded. So you might want to just listen up. But if not, go ahead and check your email. One of the first things that I want to talk about, I'm going to talk about only two things. There's many things that we can talk about miracle-mindedness, but there are two that I'm going to share with you today that I feel are the basics for miracle creation in our lives. The first one of these is the concept of innocence, that you are innocent, you're innocent, you are, I am, the people listening on the recording, we're all innocent. No, I'm not. I'm horrible. I'm bad. I'm evil. I've done all these horrible things in my life. How can you say I'm innocent? I've done terrible things. Well, you know, we start out our lives in this nice, cozy little womb space, and we're kind of floating around, and everything's taken care of for us, and we're so happy. Everything is just delightful, and then we're born, and that's when it all changes. The lights, the noises, being spanked on the butt, so that we'll cry, and when we cry, everybody goes, yay! What? I'm crying. This is not a good thing. And so as a child, we're raised, and our parents do the very best they can, so I'm not putting down parents in any way, but as children, we have to learn, right? We have to learn not to walk out into the street. We have to learn not to put our hands in the fire. We have to learn how to behave, how to be in our culture, whatever that might be. And in order to do that, we have to be corrected, right? And that's a parent's job. You know, yes, they're supposed to support us and encourage us and all of that, but they also have to correct us. And here is where the trouble starts, is that when they start correcting us, we don't hear that we did a bad or wrong thing. We hear, I'm bad, I'm wrong. We internalize that. So that by the time we get through childhood, there is this underlying feeling of always waiting for the next shoe to drop because I'm basically bad. Now, if we are approaching our manifesting, our miracle making, whatever it is, with this underlying feeling of I am wrong. Not I've done wrong, I am wrong. I am guilty and I am bad. How on earth do we think we're going to manifest anything? We can visualize, we can affirm, we can meditate, we can read good books, we can do all of those things. And then, of course, we wonder, well, why isn't my manifesting working? You know, why don't I have the new job? Why don't I have all that money? Why don't I have all these good friends and relationships? I'm doing everything Kevin told me to do. Blame Kevin. But, or blame Charles Fillmore. You know what? He started Unity. Let's blame him, shall we? Speaking of blame, that reminds me of a talk that Wayne Dyer gave one time. And one of the, you know, he was a therapist for many years before he became, you know, a speaker and a writer and all of that. And he said he'd have these clients come in and they'd be talking about all their troubles and everything. And he'd say, well, why do you think you have this problem? Well, it's my mother, you know. My mother this, my mother that. And so he said he'd say to him, you know what? Go get your mother, bring your mother here, and I'll work on your mother. Let me counsel your mother because clearly she's the problem. So they would get it. They have to be responsible. So when I'm talking about an innocence, when I'm talking about not being guilty, I'm not saying that we're not responsible. You know, we're not off the hook. I'm not saying we're not responsible for our choices and decisions. You know, our parents can only take us so far, and then they've got to let us go. And hopefully they've taught us not to put a fork in the toaster. Hopefully they've taught us not to lay our hand, you know, on an open flame. But there comes a point where, good or bad in your opinion, they let us go. And that's the point. That's the point where we become responsible. Because maybe I wasn't raised the best way. Maybe I was heartily abused. Maybe I had one of the worst upbringings in the entire world. But there comes a point where I'm an adult, and I need to be able to look at that and go, okay, now what am I going to do with this? What am I going to do about it? Because now it's on me. I can't blame mom and dad anymore. But underlying all of that, there is an innocence that we have when we came into this incarnation. There is an innocence that is there constantly. And when we can touch that innocence, when we can remember that innocence and start working from that basis rather than the basis of being guilty and bad and wrong, then we can start looking at miracles. And what is a miracle? The Course in Miracles tells you the miracle is changing your mind, changing your thinking. That's the miracle. You know, Marianne Williamson, who, as many of you I would think know, is a long-term teacher of the Course, is running for president of the United States. And she was interviewed by a reporter who wrote an article. And the reporter was like, oh, yeah, right, miracles. Uh-huh, right, she's going to tell me about miracles. So she intended to go in and say to Marianne Williamson, do a miracle, you know, show me a miracle. And so Marianne, I guess, got a little gruff with her, as Marianne can do. And she said, that's not what it's about. The miracle is that you learn something different. You change your mind. You change your thinking. You change your behavior. And that's the miracle, is being able to do that, being willing to do that, and come from that place of, I know I can do that. So one thing I'd like each of you to do right now is just put your hand on your heart, and I'll be careful not to make bad noises, and just say, I am innocent, three times. I am innocent, I am innocent, I am innocent. And just feel that innocence go to your core, because the truth is, you are innocent. So number one, recognize your innocence, welcome it, and if you catch yourself going guilty again, you just put your hand on your heart. Even if you're around somewhere, they can just think you're going to say the Pledge of Allegiance or something. And just say to yourself, I am innocent. And the more you do that, you know, the other thing that'll happen is you will start to like yourself. I know. Isn't that an unusual thought? Not love yourself. I think that's way too big a leap for most of us to take. And I think that's the problem. We're told, oh, love yourself. And it's like, how can I love myself? I'm so guilty and bad and wrong. Well, now you're innocent. You know you're innocent. And it's okay to like yourself. So after you say you're innocent, just say, I'm innocent and I like myself. Just like myself. And feel, you know, try to do that as many times during the day as you can think of it. And you will find, even after just a few days of doing that, there will be a shift for you in how you view yourself and your life. So number one, you're innocent. Number two, the other word that I would like to share with you is, and it's a Z word. You know, the poor Z words really get a bad rap. How often do you hear words that begin with Z? Zebra? Xylophone? I don't think so. Here's the word. Live your life with zest. To create miracles, live your life with zest. Now, what does that mean? Living your life with zest means you're interested in life. You're paying attention to what's going on. You allow yourself to feel energized. You're curious. You're interested in the people that you meet, not just in yourself. And you go out every day, whatever out means to you. It might just mean going from the bedroom to the living room, which was all I did for a week in the snow, but that was my going out. What's going to happen new today? There's going to be a new thought. Maybe something on the computer, but if the power goes out, maybe it'll just be a thought that the angels drop in my head. I mean, that happens all the time. We just don't realize that's what's happening. But to approach your life with that sense of energy and excitement and zest, and even write the word down and put it in front of you and say, how can I be more zestful today? Can I do something new? Every day we should do something new. And again, I don't care if you go from your bedroom to your living room and back again. Do something new every single day. Maybe you usually eat holding your fork with your right hand. Do it with your left hand. That's also really good for balancing your brain. If you usually brush your teeth using your left hand, use your right hand. Whatever you normally do, as little as that, take a different way to work. One of the greatest thing somebody taught me was where whatever room you're in, especially if it's like your dining room or somewhere where you are all the time and you're used to that room, stand on a chair and see how different your room looks when you stand on a chair. Now, granted, you'll probably see a lot of cobwebs and spider webs and things. You're like, ooh, why did I come up here? Now I have to clean more. But it changes your perspective, and that allows you to approach your life with zest. And what new people can I meet? And when you're in the grocery store and you're standing in line, really look at the people around you. Don't be a creep where they go, oh, she's looking at me. I mean, but just really, normally we're so involved in ourselves or our phones. You know, I love seeing people. The minute there's a second to not be doing something, out comes the phone. You know, especially the young folks. And it's like, wait a minute, put the darn thing away. You're not making a phone call. Check your email later. Who are the people here? Who are they? And just really pay attention. And how can I do something new? Can I have a new interest, a new hobby? You know, there was this woman that it was back in the 30s, and she desperately wanted a child, and her husband worked, and she was home alone all day, and she couldn't conceive. They couldn't have a baby for whatever reason. So they wanted to adopt. Then they found out that it was going to take, thousands of people were adopting. It was going to take years to adopt, and she was really depressed. But she thought, well, you know, I'll just have to see if we can ever, I can ever have a child. And one day, a little kitten came up to the door, a little feral kitten. And she saw the kitten, and she took the kitten. She said, well, this is cool. I guess I'll devote myself to this little kitten. So that's what she did. And she raised the kitten, and she loved the kitten and spent time with it. And, of course, it grew. And one of the little neighbor girls came over to play with the kitten. And she said, can I play with your kitten? And, of course, so the little neighbor girl was coming over to play all the time. And then the mother came over one day, and she said, I so appreciate you letting my daughter play with your kitten, because then I don't have to get one. And she said, it's so nice, because she just loves that kitten. And so they were talking, and they had tea, and the woman told her, she said, you know, she said, I really want a baby, and I can't have a baby and can't adopt. The woman said, well, I might be able to help you. She said, I'm involved with this organization, and we bring children from Europe who need homes. and there's no one over there to adopt them. And before much longer, she had a little boy from France living with her, and they adopted this little boy. The point of the story is what she did was she found something of interest, which was the kitten, and she devoted herself to that. Through that, she met the little girl. From the little girl, she met the mother, and then the mother was involved in adoption. And so for us, when you live with zest, instead of mully-grubbing about what you don't have and what you can't have, well, what can I have? Where can I put my interest? What can I do that's new and different? Throw yourself into it, and through that, that then becomes the means that the universe can use to draw to you what it is that you're looking for. That's living zestfully. And if you think about it, I know each of you can come up with your own ways that you can add more zest and energy to your life so that you become the lightning rod for what you want to create. And you truly become miracle-minded or Christ-minded, because Christ did lots of miracles, right? And that's why he lived from this. And like I said, there's many other things we could talk about, but certainly he knew he was innocent. Can you imagine Jesus saying, "Oh, shucks, I can't create loaves and fishes. My God, I'm not good enough. I mean, you know, I'm not a good carpenter, and yeah, I can't do that." Can you imagine him doing that? Of course not. He went and said, "Yeah, I can do miracles. What you need? Loaves and fishes? Here you go. Or heal a refrigerator. Whatever it is that you can do." But we are here to create miracles. That is our life's work. And we create our miracles by being who we are, recognizing our own innocence and living from that innocence while still being responsible for what we've done or said, and approaching each and every day with zest and that whole sense of newness and openness. So I wish you many great miracles, and go out and be zestful and innocent.